Acharya, Asatar, such a Shri Shrimad of Divine Grace, Aisi Bhakti, Vinod, Dishnoy, Maharaj, Prabhupada, Ki Jai.
Jai.
ISKCON founder, Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Nanda Koti, Vaishnava, Vrinda, Ki Jai. Namacharya, Srila Haridas, Thakur, Ki Jai. 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 Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu, Nityananda, Shri Advaita, Gadadhar, Shri Vasadi, Gaur, Bhakti, Vrinda, Ki Jai. Jai. Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Sharmakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Dham Ki Jai Mishpuri Dham Nabaji Mai Puram Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Gangamai Kuna Devi Ki Jai Saharani Ki Jai Namaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai
Hari Hari Bol.
All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
To the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Sri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nivasesa Sinyavani Mande Ham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Chat Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Chat Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 June 21st, 2011, Hilo, Hawaii, Skype class reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka, Chapter 10.
This is the prayers of the ladies on the balconies as Krishna's leaving Hastinapur, text 23. Savayam yat paramat surayo.
Savayam yat padam atrasurayo.
Jitendriya nirjita matarishvana.
Jitendriya nirjita matarishvana.
Pashyanti bhaktyut kalita malatmana.
Pashyanti bhaktyut kalita malatmana.
Nanvesha sadvan parimarshtumarmati.
Nanvesha sadvan parimarshtumarmati.
Sava ayam yat paramatra surayo.
Sarvayangyatmatasatrasoreyo.
Jitendriya nirjita matarishvana.
Jitendriya nirjita matarishvana.
Pasyanti bhaktyut kalita malatmana.
Pasyanti bhaktyut kalita malatmana.
Nanvesha sadvam
parimarshtum arhati. Savayam yat padam atrasurayo.
Savayam yat padam atrasurayo.
Jitendriya nirjita matarishvana. Pashanti bhaktyukila tatmalatmana.
Pashanti bhakti utkalitatmalatmana.
Nanvesha sadvang parimarshtum arhati.
Sava ayam yat padam atrasurayo.
Sava ayam yat padam atrasurayo.
Jitendriya nirjita matarishvana.
Jitendriya nirjita matarishvana.
Ashanti bhaktyut kila tamalatmana.
Pashyanti bhakti utkalitamalatmana.
Nandesha sattvam parimarshitum arhati.
Nandesha sattvam marshtum arstum arhati.
Sava ayam yat padam atrasuryayo.
Sava ayam yat padam atrasuryayo.
Jitendriya nirjita matarishvanaha.
Jitendriya nirjita matarishvana.
Pashyanti bhaktyut kalita malatmana.
Pashyanti bhaktyut kalita malatmana.
Nanvesha sattvam parimarshtum arhati.
Savayam yat, savayam yat padamatra surayo.
Savayam yat padamatra surayo.
Jitendriya nirjita matarishvana.
Jitendriya nirjita matarishvana.
Pashyanti bhaktyut kalita mavatmana.
Pashyanti bhaktyut kalita malatmana.
Esha sattvam parimarshtum arhati.
Esha sattvam parimarshtum arhati.
Savayam yat
paramatra surayo.
Jitendriya nirjita matarishvana.
Shanti
Bhatyut Kalitamalatmana.
Shanti Bhatyut Kalitamalatmana.
Nandesha Satvam Parimarshtumarhati.
Nandesha Satvam Parimarshtumarhati.
Saha.
Saha.
He.
He.
Vai.
Vai.
Vai. Providence.
Vai
providence. Providence.
I am.
I am.
I am.
I am.
This.
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 Yes.
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 At which.
That
at which.
Padam Atra.
Padam Atra.
Here is the same personality of Godhead Sri Krishna.
Here is the same personality of Godhead Sri Krishna.
Surayaha.
Surayaha.
Great devotees.
Great devotees.
Jitta Indriyaha.
Jitta
Indriyaha.
Who have overcome the influence of the senses.
Nirjita.
Thoroughly controlled.
Thoroughly controlled.
Matar Ishvanaha.
Matar Ishvanaha.
Life.
Life.
Pasyanti.
Pasyanti.
Can see.
Can see.
Bhakti.
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 By dint of devotional service.
By dint of devotional service.
Utkalita.
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 Developed.
Developed.
Amala Atmana.
Amala
Atmana.
Those whose minds are thoroughly cleansed.
Nanu Eshaha.
Certainly by this only. Existence. Oh, I'm sorry. Satvam.
Satvam.
Existence. Parimarshtum.
Parimarshtum.
For purifying the mind completely.
For purifying the mind completely.
Arhati.
Arhati.
Deserve.
Mother Irmala, if I could just interrupt at this time. First, I want to welcome everyone. Anyone who came in a little bit late, we're on Srimad Bhagavatam 110, verse 23. Mother Irmila is giving class this morning. So if everybody could please mute at this time. And Mother Irmala, if you could just give me 2 seconds here, and then you can begin.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Again, this is a continuation of the prayers of the ladies on the roofs, on the balconies. And I was thinking, you know, sometimes there's controversy about whether or not women should give Bhagavatam class. But I thought, here women are the Bhagavatam. It's not just that whether or not a woman can explain Bhagavatam, but the Bhagavatam itself for these verses are the words of the ladies. Okay, Srila Prabhupada's translation. Here is the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose transcendental form is experienced by the great devotees, who are completely cleansed of material consciousness by dint of rigid devotional service and full control of life and the senses. And that is the only way to purify existence. Purport. As it is stated in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord can be known in his real nature by dint of pure devotional service only. So it is stated here that only the great devotees of the Lord who are able to clear the mind of all material dust by rigid devotional service can experience the Lord as he is. Jitendriya means one who has full control over the senses.
The senses are active parts of the body, and their activities cannot be stopped. The artificial means of the yogic processes to make the senses inactive has proved to be an abject failure, even in the case of great yogis like Vishramita Muni. Vishramita Muni controlled the senses by yogic trance, but when he happened to meet Menaka, a heavenly society woman, he became a victim of sex, and the artificial way of controlling the senses failed. But in the case of a pure devotee, the senses are not at all artificially stopped from doing anything, but they are given different good engagements. Oops, sorry. When the senses are engaged in more attractive activities, there is no chance of their being attracted by any inferior engagements. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the senses can be controlled only by better engagements. Devotional service necessitates purifying the senses or engaging them in the activities of devotional service. Devotional service is not inaction. Anything done in service of the Lord becomes at once purified of its material nature. The material conception is due to ignorance only. There is nothing beyond Vasudeva. The Vasudeva conception gradually develops in the heart of the learned after a prolonged acceleration of the receptive organs. But the process ends in the knowledge of accepting Vasudeva as all in all. In the case of devotional service, this very same method is accepted from the very beginning, and by the grace of the Lord, all factual knowledge becomes revealed in the heart of a devotee due to dictation by the Lord from within. Therefore, controlling the senses by devotional service is the only and easiest means. Sava ayam yat padam atra surayo jitendriya nirjita mat darishvanaha pasyanti bak yut kalitam malatmana nanvesha sadvam parimarshim arhati. Here is the same Supreme Personality of Godhead whose transcendental form is experienced by the great devotees who are completely cleaned of material consciousness by dint of rigid devotional service and full control of life and the senses, and that is the only way to purify existence. So many people want to see God. Can you show me God? There's one funny story of some children in school having an art class, and the teacher said, "You can draw whatever you want." So one boy shows this picture to the teacher. She said, "What's this?" He said, "That's a picture of God." And the teacher said, "Well, nobody knows what God looks like." And the little boy says, "Well, now they do." So the point is, people think nobody has seen God. Nobody knows what God looks like. And people are wanting to see God. The atheists, the agnostics, they say, "Well, if there's really a God, why can't I see him? Why can't he be visible to me?" And there's even religions and philosophies in the world that claim that God has no form to be seen. This is something like Aesop's fable of the sour grape. The fox is jumping up to reach the grapes, and when he can't reach them, he says, "Oh, the grapes are probably sour anyway." So those who cannot see God, "Oh, God has nothing, there's nothing to be seen. There's no God to be seen anyway. That's why I can't see him." They become frustrated. Or people say, "Well, I'll only believe in God if he shows himself to me." Of course, this is very childish. It's like, "I'll only believe there's a government if Barack Obama comes and rings my doorbell." You know, as if you would care to come and ring your doorbell. So how does one see God? How does one see God? Well, on one level, one can see God through the eyes of the Shastra, Chakshush. And Krishna is describing in so many ways, especially in the Bhagavad Gita, second canto of Bhagavatam. When Srila Prabhupada was asked, "Have you seen Krishna?" he would reply various ways, but sometimes he'd say, "Yes, everybody has seen Krishna. Don't you see the sunshine?" So where I am right now, the sun has recently risen and the morning sun is streaming in my windows. And Krishna says, "I am the light of the sun." So that light, that is Krishna. The heat of fire, the warmth I'm feeling from the sun, That is Krishna. Right? Krishna says he joins with the air of life, my breathing. That air of life, that is Krishna. He's the fire of digestion. The energy I'm feeling from the food, that is Krishna. So that is one way to see Krishna. And to see Krishna like in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita as the biggest of everything, the best of everything, and the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita as the essence of everything, the essential foundation of everything. So one can see God in that way. And especially the beginner is advised in Bhagavad Gita and in Bhagavatam to see God in that way. The light of the sun, the light of the moon, the flavor of the vegetables, the active principle of everything. But if one wants to see the beautiful form, as here these ladies are seeing his transcendental form, that requires something else. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santas tadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yam shyama sundaram achincha guna swarupam. That requires that the eyes have the ointment, train anjana. They have the medicine of love smeared on them. That they're purified. Here it says, amala atmanaha. Amala, mala means something dirty. Mala is waste products, stool, urine, sweat. Those are malas of the body. Amala is purified. Amala atmanaha. Prabhupada says your minds are cleansed. Atmana can mean the body, the mind, the soul. Ones have purified. And jita indriya. Jita is like jaya, to conquer. Indriya, the senses. The senses are conquered. Frankly, even to see that God is in the sunshine, one needs some purification of senses. So many people are walking around in the sunshine and they're not God conscious at all. They don't see this as God at all. They're just, okay, the sun gets up, that means I work. I go to work and I make money so I can buy what I want. And instead of seeing the moonshine, oh, Krishna says he's become the moon and gives the life to all vegetables. Instead, oh, the moon comes up. Oh, now it's time for intoxication and illicit sex. So without purified mind and purified senses, even the sunshine and the moonshine, you don't see Krishna. What to speak of Krishna's personal form. So if we want to see God, you have to be qualified to see God. I mean, if you even want to see the mayor of the town in which you live, like I'm here in Hilo, Hawaii, little town, but if I want to see the mayor, I can't just say, well, I live here, I demand to see you. Right, there's a famous story in the Bible, the book of Esther. So Esther was the queen of Ahasuerus, and there was a plot against her community, her Jewish community within the kingdom. But the king didn't know that she was also Jewish, so she wanted to try to save her own community. And what she did was she fasted for 3 days, and then she entered the chamber of the king without being called. And it's explained in the Bible that if you entered the chamber of the king without being called, you could be executed. Even though she was his wife, she was his queen, still, without being summoned, it was very risky to enter. So in her case, he held out his scepter to receive her so that she was accepted. But the point is, if you want to see some great personality, you have to be called. You can't just present yourself. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati would say, don't try to see God. Act in such a way that God will want to see you, that he'll call for you. You can't demand, even with some big person of this world, even with some movie star, even with some sports figure. You can't just demand, I want to see you. What to speak of God, the biggest person. Sarva Karana Karana, of all the causes, he is the ultimate cause. Ishvara Parama, he is the supreme Ishvara. One cannot demand. One cannot even demand service. One can only request. So what is the situation by which the Lord will want to see you? by which the Lord will call you in, as Prabhupada explains at the end of this purport, that he'll reveal himself. He'll dictate from within. He'll reveal himself. Well, he wants to reveal himself to someone who's purified, who's purified their mind, who's purified their senses, who has control over their senses. Again, this is very understandable. Just like a young child who can't control their senses. One of my grandchildren here, we got her a little plastic box to keep her coloring supplies in. And one day she was angry and she threw her box around, across the room, and she broke it. So when someone has uncontrolled senses, they can't be trusted. She said, "Grandma, I want a computer." And I said, "Well, if we give you a computer, maybe you'll throw that across the room and you'll break it when you're angry." So they're restricted. So somebody who can't be trusted, somebody whose mind and senses are uncontrolled, someone basically who's crazy or immature, so they can't be trusted. You're not going to reveal to them your innermost heart. You're going to keep something separate. So therefore, Krishna demands you have to have your mind and your senses controlled. And when you can be trusted, when you're purified, when you have affection, even for us, you know, someone comes to our door and we don't want to let them in unless we know that they're a friend. You have to be someone you can trust. Do they have affection for us? Are they going to care about our interests? So Krishna is also like that. Now, this leads to a great misunderstanding. Prabhupada, in this translation, uses the word rigid, rigid devotional service. And again, he says in the purport, able to clear the mind of all material dust by rigid devotional service. Then he also says, the Vasudeva conception gradually develops in the heart of the learned after a prolonged acceleration of the receptive organs, which is a really interesting English construction. Prolonged acceleration of the receptive organs. Acceleration means to speed up. Receptive organs, we're assuming, means the knowledge acquiring senses. So for a very long time, to speed up the receptivity of the senses. This sounds like, to many people, that one should be controlling the mind and the senses by force. This word rigid strikes us. Rigid means something that's not moving, that's still, that's hard. We have here prolonged. It sounds like it's something that takes a lot of work. Now, in one sense, that's a fact. Prabhupada says, until nistha, it's a hard struggle with determination. So in one sense, that is true. Prabhupada also said that it's like declaring war on illusion. War is not pleasant. As one famous general said, war is hell. Even people who have romantic ideas about battle, as soon as they actually get into battle, their romantic ideas are finished. But this is not the whole truth. There are those who try to purify the mind and senses simply through willpower, through determination, and through mechanical means. Prabhupada says here that this is proved to be an abject failure. And he cites the example, which he cites many times, of Vishramrita Muni. Vishramrita Muni was a much greater yogi than we're going to meet on the earth today. Now, certainly today, there are some genuine yogis. My daughter-in-law's father told me how once when he was in Rishikesh, he met one yogi who invited him to visit him in his cave. And when Gopavrindapal went to this yogi's cave, the yogi was sitting outside the cave in meditation and didn't even notice that Gopavrindapal Prabhu had arrived. And Gopavrindapal Prabhu waited and waited and waited. Finally, it got to be night. He slept in the cave. And when he woke up in the morning, there'd been a snowstorm. The yogi was still sitting outside, although there was snow up to his chest, and he was not responding. So this is called pratyadhara, where you withdraw the senses from their external sense objects. We all do this mechanically to some extent in deep sleep. When we're in deep sleep, none of our senses are aware of our surroundings. The eyes are not aware of what's around, the ears are not aware, the skin is not aware, nothing is aware, there's no awareness. We've cut off the contact between the senses and the sense objects. We've withdrawn our senses, just like the turtle, as Krishna explains in the Gita, withdraws its senses inside of the shell. So we do that in deep sleep, although of course that's done without our conscious effort or our knowledge. And that process is also used in the mystic yoga, pratyadhara. Of course, in pratyadhara, in mystic yoga, they're not exactly in deep sleep, but they're in a controlled trance where the intelligence is awakened within and one is meditating within. But one is doing that by force. So Prabhupada gives the example of this great yogi, greater than this yogi in Rishikesh, Vishramitra Muni, who could meditate underwater. Not only could he meditate in snow, but underwater a human being cannot breathe. So this means to be underwater, either you have to go for a very long time without breathing, or you have to find some means of breathing underwater like a fish. So the yogis who perform mystic yoga, mechanical yoga, they knew how to do this kind of thing. Again, we can meet people today who can do it to some extent. There have been scientific studies of yogis who can slow down their heart rate and breathing. You know, they put them in a sealed box for several hours, and they go into a state basically of intentional hibernation where everything slows down, almost stops. But it's not that the desires have stopped. You know, if you want to lose weight, it's a good idea not to buy cake and cookies. But that doesn't mean the desire for cake and cookies is gone. And so many people who try to go on a diet, they lose the weight and then again they gain it all back again. I have so many examples of this. One does without something for a while and then binges. Okay, I won't do this, I won't do this, I won't do this. And then when there's some opportunity, when something comes that's tempting enough, then again we go back. So this is not the way. One can become successful doing this, certainly, up to a point. But at a certain point, the nature of the soul will reassert itself. An intelligent person can understand that misery is caused by desire and interaction of the senses of their objects. Dukkha yoni, Krishna says. Sparsha. Bhoga, that's sparshaja. Bhoga, happiness, sparshaja, that's born from touch. Touch doesn't just mean of the skin, the eye, the light touching the eye, the vibration touching the ear, the fragrance touching the nose, the taste touching the tongue, the soft, pleasant things touching the skin. Any of this bhoga that's from sparshaja, that's born from sparsha, dukkha yoni, it is the source of misery. So someone who has some intelligence understands this and may try to stop these senses in the mind by force, but the nature of the soul is active. Prabhupada says here, the senses are active. But why are the senses active? Because I'm in the body. When I leave the body, my senses are no longer active. Therefore, it is not the senses that are active exactly, not on the bodily platform. But I am the one who is active. I'm full of energy. I am Krishna's divine energy. Therefore, I want to be active. Krishna is active. I also want to be active. Krishna is never static, even. Krishna loves to solve mysteries and understand. He comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to solve the mystery of Radharani's love for him. He loves having things he doesn't know so he can learn. Therefore, he's always expanding himself and then expanding his knowledge. Krishna's always doing things, although he has nothing to do. And he's always looking for pleasure, anandamaya bhyasa, which is my nature. So my nature is I want to live, I want to expand, to grow, to learn, to understand, to enjoy. And just because the material way of doing it is miserable doesn't mean I can stop doing it. So just simply to try to stop doesn't work. Prabhupada gives the example of an active child. You put them in the corner. How long can they stay in the corner? They become restless. Or sometimes we may have said, oh, I don't want to be with anybody anymore. I'm tired of being with people. We just shut ourselves up in a room. I know of someone like that. Oh, so many problems in ISKCON. Let me move away from ISKCON. So many problems with the devotees. Let me not be with the devotees. Let me shut myself up in a room. And then after a while, he's just watching television. So one cannot just stop it. But this is a misunderstanding. And of course, this is the idea of the Mayavadis. The Mayavadis just try to stop everything. And the mystic yogis try to stop everything. And then once they become purified, then they want to see God. The klesho dika tarashtesham avyakta shaktite chasam avyakta hi gitir dukam deha vabir avapkite. This doesn't work. First of all, it's artificial to do. The process itself is artificial to do. Just stop, 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 stop. And then once you've achieved that perfection, then going on and seeing God is very difficult. Because you've already said, I don't want to see anything, I don't want to hear anything, I don't want to taste anything, I don't want to touch anything. Then you cannot see and hear and taste and touch God either. So just trouble. Yet even those who take up Krishna consciousness sometimes think that this is the process. Just stop. Artificial. Rigid. Clamp down. Repress, repress, repress. Stop, stop, stop. Of course, all human beings have to have some repression. If you go to a shop and see something you want, you don't just take it. If you see some attractive person, you don't just rape them. It's not that whatever you're thinking, you should just say. Yesterday, two of my granddaughters were talking, and the younger one said to the older one, "You're stupid." And I said, you shouldn't call people stupid. You could maybe say, I think that's a stupid idea, but don't say you're stupid. And my older granddaughter said, I don't even think you should say that something's a stupid idea. Mostly you should just keep things to yourself and not say them. So that's civilized. Civilized person has some repression and some suppression. Otherwise one is an animal. But suppression and repression is not the primary process. It is not how one is going to become qualified so God will want to see you. I mean, after all, suppressed and repressed people are very unpleasant. Have you ever been around a person who's suppressing and repressing everything? They're not very much fun. Who wants to be with them? Would you invite them to your house for a party? Krishna has an eternal festival going on. He's not really interested in cold-hearted people. And to find the people who are just working by suppressing and repressing, they're cold, they're often very angry, because they're not getting any happiness. And eventually such people fail, as Visvamitra Muni failed. First he fell down due to lust. Little thing, he just heard Menaka's jewelry. From under the water, he heard her jewelry clanging, and he thought, oh, must be a woman. Just from that, he didn't even see her. And from that, he fell down due to lust. Then he decided, okay, I'm never going to have a problem with lust again. And when Indra sent Ramba, instead of engaging in illicit sex with her, he became so angry that he, I think he turned her into a stone. But then he became under the control of anger. And we find this, people who are just suppressing and repressing, they become angry, they become bitter, they become hard-hearted. Bhakti is the process of melting the heart. Rupa Goswami explains this so nicely in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The heart should become soft like butter, not hard like a stone. So what is our process? We have to control the mind and the senses. We have to become amala atmana. And Prabhupada says here, it can only be controlled by better engagement. What's really beautiful here, Prabhupada says, even from the beginning, this very same method is accepted from the very beginning. So in the ultimate issue, the way that one serves Krishna is with purified senses. Rishikena, Rishikena. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhakti, Uchite. That one is serving Krishna with purified senses. And at that point, Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavir, Brahmagno, Brahmana, Hutam, Brahmayavatena, Gantavyam, Brahmakarma, Samadhina. The consummation is absolute, and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. The Prabhupada says in this purport to 424, matter dovetailed for the cause of the absolute truth regains its spiritual quality. Krishna consciousness is the process of converting the illusory consciousness into Brahman or the Supreme. When the mind is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, it is said to be in samadhi or trance. Anything done in such transcendental consciousness is called yajna or sacrifice for the absolute. In that condition of spiritual consciousness, the contributor, the contribution, the consumption, and the performer or leader of the performance and the result, everything becomes one in the absolute truth, the Supreme Brahman. That is the method of Krishna consciousness. So you can say, well, okay, that's said for one who's already in samadhi, for one who's already perfect. Everything that the senses do when offered to the Supreme becomes spiritual. And that is the way of controlling the senses. But that's for the perfected beings. No, Prabhupada says here also from the very beginning. From the very beginning. Yat karoshi yat agnasi yat jahosi vidasi yat yat sapastasi kamsa yat tatsurushva madarpanam. Whatever we do should be offered, and it should be offered, Prabhupada says, with love. Prabhupada says that even for those who are not able to follow all the rules and regulations, Bhagavad Gita 3:31 purport, should be offered with love, some affection. And that is really how one controls the senses. It's through affection. Through affection. When I have affection for someone, then I care what I say to them, how I say it to them, what I do. We see even in our human relationships, when people have no affection, then their senses and mind become uncontrolled in their dealings with one another. But when they have affection, they voluntarily control their behavior to please the other person. And it's not a big burden. It's not a big burden. If I have affection for someone, naturally, I want to say things that will make them happy. I want to do things that will make them happy. And I refrain from doing the things that will make them unhappy. And I don't feel, oh, this is some terrible burden. So if any of us have ever been madly in love with somebody in this world, of course that's not real love, but we can have some idea that when you're madly in love with somebody, you don't think it's a burden to do things for them. You don't even notice the trouble that you're taking if you really care about them. So that is the way of controlling the senses. That we can use everything. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is not narrow or stereotyped. Everything can be used in Krishna's service. Of course, we refrain from intoxication, meat-eating, illicit sex, and gambling. But other than sinful things, we're not going to try to murder in Krishna's service or steal in Krishna's service. But other than that, everything that we, all of our talents, all of our inclinations, everything. Eating, speaking, walking, singing, hearing, everything. And that's how we control the senses. by saying, how can I use my senses? How can I use my mind in a way that will please Krishna? And that's real. That's real. That's not suppression or repression. That's genuine control. And although in the beginning that requires some effort, some conscious deliberation, that gradually, as one goes on more and more, it becomes just natural, because it is natural for the soul. It is the natural position of the soul to be engaging all the senses in the service of Krishna. Just like it is natural to engage all the senses in the service of the stomach of our own body. That's natural. The newborn baby doesn't need to be taught that all of its senses should be engaged in feeding its hunger. Just is. The belly is the center, is the root. In the same way, Krishna is the root. He is the root of which we are a part. And it's natural that we want to give everything to him and use all of our senses to him. It's not really something to be learned, although when one has developed an artificial life, one has to learn it. But as one learns it, the natural situation again manifests. Now, of course, also in the beginning, one is engaging one's senses because one becomes convinced intellectually that this is the right thing to do. And one is engaging one's senses because it says in the Shastra to do this, it says in the Shastra to do that, the spiritual master says this, the spiritual master says that, this is what I'm supposed to do, this is what's in the rule book. In the beginning, it's definitely like that, although even in the beginning, there's some affection for Krishna, otherwise one would not even be in the process. And that is called Vaidhi Bhakti. One is doing it because it's the rule. But the idea is to come to the point of doing it because of affection only. Whether it's the rule or not the rule doesn't matter anymore. That's not the point. Prabhupada talks about how formerly in India there were arranged marriages. And often the marriages were arranged when the persons were quite young, when they were children. That doesn't mean they lived together as husband and wife when they were children, as is sometimes done today, especially with the girls. But what Prabhupada said would happen is that the families would meet from time to time. And then the families would instruct the young boy and girl how to behave with each other. They'd say to the young girl, here, take this plate of sweets and bring it to your husband. They would train them in service and train them. This is the person you're going to marry. Why did they do that? Many reasons. But one was it basically stops illicit sex within the society. But at a certain point, Prabhupada explains that relationship becomes spontaneous and natural when they're sufficiently grown up and then they have their wedding and they live together. Their affection for each other blossoms naturally. It's no longer, I'm doing this because someone told me to. It becomes, I'm doing this naturally. So that is the process also with Krishna consciousness, because it is natural. It is our natural state. And then Krishna becomes attracted. And he wants to reveal himself to us. He wants to see us. This also is natural. I want to see somebody who loves me, genuinely loves me. Not trying to exploit me, but if someone genuinely loves me, naturally I want to see them. Naturally, I want to be with them. So Krishna also feels this way. And in our process, at least externally, the beginning and the end is the same. In the beginning, one is chanting, and the end, one is chanting. In the beginning, one is using one's senses. The end, one is using one's senses. What is the difference? The difference is the level of consciousness and the level of affection. So Krishna consciousness is meant to be a joyful process, kevala ananda kanda. It's not meant to be something harsh. Even though Prabhupada uses the word, you're rigid, he doesn't mean something that's harsh. or something that's refreshing. It means something that is flowing from affection. So that is what we should try to be cultivating. And how to do that? By hearing about Krishna. Just like somebody may hear about some charity project in Africa, and they develop some attachment for it, and they give their money, they may even fly there and give their time, they start sacrificing. So if I hear about Krishna, I hear how wonderful Krishna is, how sweet, how beautiful, how kind, how much he reciprocates with his devotees, how powerful, how intelligent, how opulent. Then naturally I want to give myself to him. This morning I was listening to Ananda Vrindavan Champu, where after the Indra sends all the rain in Vrindavan and Krishna puts down the hill, Indra comes with Surabhi, and all the demigods come also. And all the demigods, male and female, they are bathing Krishna, they are dressing Krishna, they're offering aarti to Krishna. Each one of them is offering Krishna some different gift. And as I was listening, I was thinking how wonderful it would be if we had some book where each of these descriptions was illustrated. If we could see some painting of each of the demigods offering their gifts. And then I was thinking, how nice to see that, if one could be there in Vrindavan when Krishna's there and observe all the demigods worshipping Krishna and offering Krishna their gifts and see Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill and playing with his cowherd boyfriends, and how much more wonderful even to enter into that. So as one's desires, as Krishna explains in the 12th chapter, that the whole purpose of this practice is to develop ichcha, or the desire. As one's desires begin to develop like that, oh, I want to see that. I want to be part of that. It's the same process materially. Somebody reads about Hawaii and they think, oh, I want to go there. Or they read about some project and think, I want to be part of that. So in the same way, by hearing about Krishna, by associating with devotees, naturally, we will want to control our senses and use them in Krishna's service, which will attract Krishna. And the more that we do that, the more we attract Krishna, the more our desire to hear about Krishna increases, the more that we hear about Krishna and associate with sadhus, the more we want to naturally control our senses and use them in his service, which then attracts him, which then gives us more taste, and as we have more taste, we do more service, etc. So the key here is, what are we hearing and with whom are we associating? Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhiha, Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastra Koi. All the Shastras, they say that Lava Matra, even an 11th of a second of association with the Sadhu, Sarva Siddhi, one will get all perfection. Greater than the perfection of the mystic yogis who can grab a mango from the other side of the planet. Greater than that perfection, the perfection of entering into Krishna's pastimes. So the question we ask ourselves is, what is my sangha? Karana guna sangasya sadasad aryonishi. By associating with the modes and hearing from the modes, I will get desires that are material. If I'm watching television and movies and listening to ordinary music and reading ordinary books and associating with materialistic people, then I'll have those desires and I will use my senses in that way. But if I'm associating with the sadhus and hearing from the sadhus, as much as possible, filling my mind and heart with this amala purana, then I will get an amala atmana. So this is my choice. This is my choice, and there's nobody that can make that choice for me. With whom do I choose to associate? What do I choose to hear? What do I choose to meditate on? And then naturally, the senses will follow, and they'll be engaged in Krishna service. And then I will see Krishna. I will see Krishna. Maybe it will start by seeing how he's the sunshine and the moonshine and the breath of air and the digestive fire and my ability and intelligence and the ability and intelligence of others. Maybe it will start with that. but at some point I will actually see Krishna, like these ladies are seeing Krishna walking down the streets at Hastinapur. And Prabhupada said, one will see God face to face and speak with him just as we speak with anyone else. Questions, comments? I can't stay very long today, but I could take a couple.
So, Prabhupada, if there's any questions or comments, otherwise, please remain unmuted. I'm sorry, muted, so there's not too much background noise. Anything?
Oh, yeah, I have, I'd like to say something. Mother Irmela, after your lovely class, it sort of draws me back to the very first statement you made. You were describing how the ladies of Hastinapur were speaking so beautifully, such ardent prayers, that was, in fact, Bhagavatam. And then we read two chapters ago the beautiful prayers by Queen Kunti. But then you mentioned that there was controversy that women should not give classes. And I can't help but wonder, after so many statements by Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, I mean, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita said, Mamhi parta vipassarita yepi siu papayonia striya vaishastha shubhas yepi antiparangatim. Mahaprabhu, when speaking to Ramananda Roy, said, Kiba vipara kiba nyase sudra kaninoi ye Krishna tatavete se guru hoy. So, with such strong points, what is the other side of an argument that women should not give Bhagavatam class?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because the verses we're reading right now are spoken by women. So, the women are the Bhagavatam class. It's not just women giving the Bhagavatam class, they are the Bhagavatam class. I can give you my own take on this. I see several reasons for the problem. One is that there's a confusion between what is matter and what is spirit. The very beginning idea that there's a difference between the soul and the body. So also understanding that there's a difference between material activities that are offered in Krishna's service and purely spiritual activities. And Prabhupada explains this very nicely in Bhagavad Gita 9:30, as well as in several other places, that we have two categories of dharma, the one related to the body and mind, which is generally called varnashram, and one related to the soul, which is called the nine processes of devotional service. So I see that people sometimes confuse these, because within the platform of the body and mind, of course there are differences between the duties of men and women. I mean, that's a no-brainer. Just biologically, women's bodies and male and men's bodies are differently suited. I was reading about women in sports and how women who take up sports tend to get very particular injuries, especially to their knees and hips, because the woman's hips are designed for bearing children, not for running. So there's a difference biologically. And if you try to force the male body to act like a female body or the female body to act like a male body, it doesn't work. And the same with psychology. Men and women have overall different psychologies. So therefore, we have different external duties. And then there's individuals. We're each individuals. And we have different external duties. And then also on the material platform, there we should be very careful about mixing men and women. We describe that women are like fire and men are like butter. And if men and women are not careful about how they mix with one another, then there's illicit sex in society, which destroys society materially and spiritually. But that's the material side. On the spiritual side, everyone is equal. And it doesn't matter whether you're a five-year-old child like Prahlad or Dhruva, whether you're an old man like Vyasadeva, whether you're a woman like these ladies in Hastinapur, whether you're a man like Maharaj Parikshit, it just doesn't matter. Whether you're an animal like Hanuman, it doesn't matter. So people get these things confused. And they think that because there are differences in the material things that we offer to Krishna, therefore there should also be differences in the spiritual things we offer to Krishna according to the body. So in one area of service, yes, we should have differences according to the body. In one area of service, a five-year-old child shouldn't be driving a car. Even though the car is being driven for Krishna, you don't let the five-year-old child drive the car for Krishna. But if the five-year-old child is Dhruva Maharaj, then certainly he can give Bhagavatam class. So that's the first thing. People mix these things up. They don't understand. The other thing I see is that we don't like to see someone else as a soul if we want to exploit them. So just like the meat eaters, they're incapable of understanding that the animals are a living being like them with feelings and desires and personality. As soon as they understand that, they can't eat them anymore. So in order to eat animals, you have to cut off your idea that this animal has feelings and desires and personality like you. You must. It's absolutely required. You have to do it. So there's a lot of injunctions in the Shastra about whether you're a Shudra or whether you're a Brahmana, you can be a devotee. And those things were spoken at a time when it was much easier to exploit the workers and servants than it is today. So in our modern society, especially in the West, but increasingly everywhere, there's no such thing as slavery, for example, and even the concept of someone being a servant is not very prevalent. Therefore, the desire of the higher classes to exploit the servants is not so strong. And so we're not so opposed to the idea of somebody who would be in the servant class on a material level being a spiritual leader. That doesn't bother us so much. To let some man who is the garbage collector give Bhagavatam class along with the person who is translating books from Sanskrit to English, it's not an issue for us because in modern society, we don't have much facility to exploit the lower classes as they did previously. However, the concept of men exploiting women and women exploiting men is still very prominent. So for a man to exploit a woman, he has to see that woman as an object. He has to see her as a body, as a woman, rather than as a fellow soul. As soon as he sees her as a fellow soul, he can no longer exploit her for his own pleasure. He has to treat her with respect. So I see that men who want to exploit women, or men who want to hate women for their own lust, for their own material tendency, they want to blame the woman, they tend to see women as objects, and they very strongly resist seeing the women as equal beings. Then there are also women like that, because after all, we've all come here to exploit. And one way, the way that women exploit is by presenting themselves as an object, saying, here, I'm an object for your sense gratification. And if a woman presents herself that way, then she can manipulate men who are lusting after her and women who are envious of her. So women who want to try to control the world like that, they also resist this idea of women being persons. They want women to be seen just as objects. And this desire to enjoy in this way is the root of our material conditioning, that I want to be the Purusha and I want to exploit Prakriti. And this is symbolized in our bodies of men and women. So particularly to give women spiritual freedom and say that women are spiritually can engage equally with men. In order to do that, one must break this concept that either I am a woman and I can use that to exploit others, or this is a woman that I can exploit. So therefore, I see there's a very strong resistance. You have to be able to cut that desire for exploitation in order to see women as spiritually equal beings. The other is a philosophical problem, which I see is very related. The difficulty between untangling what our material duties offer to Krishna, which are different according to our individual body and mind, and what our spiritual duties offer to Krishna that are the same for everyone's body and mind. So that's my analysis of why it's so difficult although we don't have a problem, you know, with races or with occupations, we don't have a problem saying that no matter what your race is, no matter what your nationality is, no matter what your occupation is, no matter what your IQ level is, no matter what your age is, we don't have a problem with those things, but we have a problem with with women.
But what is their argument? You've defeated it. But what do they say? I mean, what can you? You know, is there
what
some shastra? Is there?
Well, they'll bring up the material differences between men and women and push that over into the spiritual. They'll say men and women have different duties. Therefore, spiritually, they should also have different duties. They mix the material and spiritual. That's their argument.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. Their other argument will be that if you allow women spiritual equality, you'll have an improper mixing between men and women, and you'll have illicit sex. Actually, it's the opposite. Because as soon as you give women spiritual equality, then both men and women will see each other as spiritual beings, and they're far less likely to be exploited of each other. So it's exactly.
We have equality. We have equality everywhere else. I mean, men can dress as deities, women can dress as deities. Men can cook, women can cook. Everywhere else, we see equality in one sense.
Well,
why not giving class?
We will tend to make equality. I'm going to be a little cynical here, but we do tend to have equality when it's for some practical purpose. So we don't mind. I mean, I was at one temple where it turned out I was the first woman there to give class, and some people were really angry about it. And then I noticed that they were engaging the services of a woman architect. This was in India. Why? Because she was offering her services for free, and she was a very good architect. So I thought, okay, well, they don't mind that there's a woman architect. In the same way, we see that, you know, nobody minds if a woman gives money to a temple or if the women are willing to do hard work that nobody else wants to do. So that's a little bit of my cynicism there.
Okay. Thank you.
It's not logical, you know. And what we've often done in ISKCON is we've done it backwards, so that we've tried to make things equal materially and unequal spiritually. You know, sending women out away from their husbands and children to collect money on the street because men and women are equal. So really putting a woman in a man's position on a material platform and then not allowing that same woman to lead the kirtan or give a class. Because, oh, now you're unequal materially. So that's a mode of ignorance. Mode of ignorance, you think what's religion is irreligion and what's irreligion is religion. So we'll say, okay, yeah, men and women can be equal materially but unequal spiritually, and it should be the opposite. But those are the arguments I see is that they'll take the things from the Shastra about the differences of material duties, and they'll say that applies to the spiritual duties. They can't untangle what's an essentially spiritual duty from what is a spiritualized material duty.
Thank you.
Can I make a comment? This is Karbapati, just really quickly.
Yeah,
we can hear you go.
Can you hear me all right? I can't remember where. I know it's in Shastra somewhere, but Prabhupada was commenting that the women, I think he was speaking about Nandarani specifically here, that he was saying that the women are actually more intelligent than the men. And the basis of that was that if you're identifying with your body, then you are, quote, a woman and limited by all the shastric things. But he says, my disciples, they're not identifying with their body. And so therefore, all of that doesn't apply. Transcendental.
Yes.
So
I mean,
it kind of goes in line with
time. We have to recognize what body and mind we have when it comes to how we're working for Krishna, separate from Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. And that's for everybody. That's not just a gender thing. That's everybody. So one person is an artist, another person likes to cook, another person is a good manager, and we have different talents and different abilities that we're giving to Krishna. And that requires a little, you know, thoughtfulness that I've got a various vehicle, let me use my vehicle in Krishna's service. So So on that level, we do need to know what is our the designation that we have. But if we think that's me, that's just the vehicle that we have. If we think that's me, yes, then we're less intelligent. That's what actual less intelligence is. What I've seen is that the communities where this sort of thing is understood, where it's understood that there are some activities where there is a difference and there's some activities where we all are on an equal footing, that people are very happy and enlivened spiritually, and people are able to maintain their vows and able to maintain their enthusiasm over the long haul.
Do you have time for one more question?
Probably just about that, yeah, and then I got to get into the house.
I'm sorry, did anyone else have anything to say?
I just wanted to say one thing that I've been listening to all this. I think because of the structure of the movement managerially, and Prabhupada didn't want a centralized bureaucracy, the diversity of the movement is absolutely going to happen whether people resist it or not. It's not going to be a cookie cutter, lorded over, centralized bureaucracy. That is never going to work. Prabhupada wanted independently thoughtful men, autonomous centers. And so what you're talking about at the end is there's going to be communities, there's going to be sanghas, there's going to be different sanghas, and they're going to have different moods and different, some things are important to them and some things are less important to them. And there's going to be the ability to find a place where like-minded devotees are going to be able to share and become enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness. It's inevitable. It's going to be a diverse movement. And whether the movement is going to be so rigid in its management that it's going to have to break to do that, or if you're going to just let it go, one way or another, it's going to happen.
It's already happening.
Right. So I just wanted to read one verse in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam that relates to the verse here in this that you read this morning.
Okay.
Here is the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose transcendental form is experienced by the great devotees who are completely cleansed of material consciousness. So this is Lord Shiva to the Prachetas.
Oh, I love that section.
My dear Lord, I wish to see you exactly in the form that your very dear devotees worship. You have so many other forms, but I wish to see your form that is especially liked by the devotees. Please be merciful upon me and show me that form, for only that form worshipped by the devotees can perfectly satisfy all the demands of the senses.
Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to the assembled devotees.
Hi. Hare Hare Bol.
Thank you.
Hare Hare Bol.
Hare Hare Bol, Prabhupada.